This is WRAL News, your number one source for local news.
It will be rainy and cold for the rest of this afternoon, but coming up, I'll show you who could see temperatures close to 70 tomorrow.
Concerns over new, more contagious variants of COVID-19 prompts new mask guidance from doctors. Upgrade your mask or double up.
And scientists detected a COVID-19 variant here in North Carolina last week. Today, we're hearing from local experts about how they detected that new strain. And of course, the rain falling across the middle of our area right now. Most of our area, really, our viewing area. Good afternoon to you. I'm Jeff Hogan, and this is a live picture right now from our storm tracker out there in the middle of it all.
That's right. On Highway 55 in Apex, I'm Renee Chu. Meteorologist Elizabeth Gardner is in the WRAL Severe Weather Center to show us how long we'll be dealing with these wet conditions.
That's right. It is messy out there. It's going to be with us for the remainder of the day. And not only is it wet, but it's also chilly. Temperatures are in the low to mid 40s, and we're not going to see that changing for the rest of the day today. You can see here in some places the precipitation's a little heavier than others, but generally we're just seeing the steady rain coming down, and that will be with us all the way through the evening commute before we start to see it tapering off a little bit. Here's a look at Wilson, and you can see the whirligigs are spinning just a little bit, but it's very wet. There's no one who is braving the whirligig park today, and I don't blame them at all. Here's a look at Futurecast. As we roll through lunchtime, we just continue to see waves of the rain moving through. Some of it may be a little bit heavier closer to the Virginia line, but everybody's really going to see this precipitation at least through the evening commute, and then it begins to taper off and lift northward and ease up a little bit overnight tonight. Hour by hour, though, check out the temperatures. Right now, looking at low to mid 40s, and that's where we'll be all the way through the evening. But then notice this. Notice our temperatures even overnight start to go up a little bit. We'll talk about how things will change pretty significantly for us tomorrow, coming up.
Track the rain and stay on top of the changing weather conditions by downloading the WRAL weather app. Turn on notifications to receive updates on the forecast where you live based on your phone's GPS.
Ken Smith here in the Live Center. We're getting new numbers into our newsroom in terms of how North Carolina stacks up when it comes to the COVID-19 vaccine and how it's administered. Let me take you right to the numbers. According to CDC data, it shows that North Carolina has administered about 51% of the vaccine that has been distributed here to North Carolina. So how does this break down by the numbers? The total number distributed in terms of how many doses have been in our state, 1.2 million we've received, and of that 1.2 million, more than 636,000 doses have been administered. That puts North Carolina 27th in the number of vaccines distributed and 30th when it comes to the amount of vaccine actually administered. We're still waiting for the new COVID-19 numbers in terms of the impact this virus is having on our state. As soon as those numbers come in, we'll bring them to you here in the Live Center.
So, Ken, it continues the message, don't get complacent. That is the warning from Dr. Anthony Fauci. He appeared on NBC's Today show telling the public that the drop in cases is likely due to a natural plateauing of cases after a spike following the holiday season. Dr. Fauci also addressed the vaccine's efficiency and effectiveness against the UK strain and a new South African strain.
Yes, we are more concerned about the South African strain right now because when you do studies in the test tube, in vitro studies, it shows that the ability of monoclonal antibodies that have been used for therapy, that is really impaired in the presence of these particular variants. In other words, these monoclonal antibodies don't nearly work as well as treatment. There is a very slight, modest diminution in the efficacy of a vaccine against it, but there's enough cushion with the vaccines that we have that we still consider them to be effective against both the UK strain and the South African strain.
Well, Dr. Fauci added that those coming into the country will have to have a COVID-19 test before they board a plane to the U.S., and people must quarantine when they arrive. And we're learning more about the first case of the U.K. variant strain here in North Carolina. That variant was first detected in a person in the U.K. and has been discovered in a person in Mecklenburg County now. WRAL Sloan Heffernan is live at COVID testing site in Wake Forest to explain why this case is concerning and what's being done to keep track of more of these cases if they develop, Sloan.
Jeff, this testing site in Wake Forest, which we've shown you before, delivers results in about 7 hours. While the test is the same, the process to detect this new variant in a lab is much more involved and takes more time. Early data suggesting that this variant may be more contagious than the others. Now, the sample, as you mentioned, came from an adult male in Mecklenburg County, but it was processed right up the road at Mako Medical Laboratories in Henderson. They contacted the CDC and the North Carolina Department of Public Health when they got the positive result for that UK variant, the first in our state.
Back out there, because the contact tracing piece of this is obviously very important.
Now, not all labs are equipped to do this type of testing. The vice president of lab operations for Mako up in Henderson tells me that they receive samples from all across the United States, and they have found the UK variant in samples from Florida, Colorado, Maryland, Wisconsin, and many others, and now North Carolina. He hopes it does not become the dominant variant. We are told that this variant does respond to the vaccine, meaning that the vaccine will hopefully work when it comes to this particular variant. Back to you.
Well, we can all hope that. Certainly live in Wake Forest for us this noon. Sloan Heffernan, thank you.
Top doctors agree the vaccines being put into people's arms right now should hold up against the new COVID variants that are being detected around the world. Stephanie Gosk reports health officials now have new guidance about mask wearing to protect you from these more contagious strains.
This morning, less than a month after first being detected in the U.S., the U.K. variant of COVID-19 has been found in at least 23 states. As health experts warn, the mutation could become the dominant strain by March.
This strain has the potential to spread very quickly in this country.
While researchers are working to determine if the variant has a higher death rate, it's clear the strain is much easier to transmit. To prevent a more disastrous surge, doctors say it's time to double down on mask wearing.
This is not something to wait on. We should be getting higher quality masks, and people should be wearing higher quality masks more or less right away.
While N95 masks are still the gold standard, blocking 95% of particles, they may be harder to find and should be reserved for healthcare workers. Experts now say the next best thing may be double masking.
Wearing two masks helps improve the filtration ability of the mask in both directions, and so it helps protect you better and it helps protect others.
Researchers at Virginia Tech found layering two cloth masks will up the efficacy from 50% to 75%. And wearing a three-layer mask can block up to 90% of particles, providing near N95 protection. Ideal for so-called high-risk situations, like traveling, going to the grocery store, or gathering with others.
You want to wear your best possible mask, which includes multiple layers, ideally some kind of filter material, and a really good fit.
Experts say wearing a single lower-grade medical face covering like a KF94 or a double-layered cloth covering with a high thread count will provide a basic level of protection if there's a secure fit. The bottom line, more layers mean more protection, and those loose-fitting or single-layer coverings are just not enough. Stephanie Gosk, NBC News.
83% of American adults say wearing a mask is an effective way to protect themselves and others from COVID-19, but only 51% of people said they wear a facial covering in public. Researchers in California say the study revealed that the beliefs of some Americans regarding masks don't necessarily carry over to their actual behavior.
Here's a look at the new COVID-19 developments at this hour. The U.S. Supreme Court declined to consider how far states can go without violating religious freedom when imposing restrictions on churches to slow the spread of COVID-19. And CVS has announced this morning it has completed the first round of COVID-19 vaccinations in about 8,000 nursing homes. The second doses are now underway and should be finished within 4 weeks. And Target plans to spend $200 million in employee bonuses after it reported strong holiday season sales during the pandemic. Hourly workers will get $500 and employees in leadership roles will get between $1,000 and $2,000. Take a look at stocks for you this noon. Right now, there were some gains last week. They're not happening this week. We're starting off in negative territory as far as the Dow Jones Industrial Average is concerned, down 180 points right now. NASDAQ is hanging in there, up 39 points right now, but a struggle to start here on a Monday, Renee.
New at noon, Duke Energy customers could soon see a reduction in their bills. A settlement has been reached with Duke Energy over the coal ash cleanup. The state energy general's office making that announcement today. The attorney general, the state's utilities commission, and the Sierra Club had challenged an order allowing Duke to pass cleanup costs off to customers. Today, the Ag Department called the settlement a win for customers. Naya Harden explains what this means for North Carolinians.
Good morning, everybody.
Attorney General Josh Stein speaking proudly today about the savings Duke Energy customers will see for the next decade related to the coal ash cleanup cost. The total cost for cleanup till 2030 is estimated to be around $4 billion. The settlement is expected to save customers more than $1.1 billion, meaning customers would still pay 75% of the cost. The Utilities Commission will give its decision in the coming days on future rates. If adopted, Attorney General Stein says customers could notice lower bills starting this year.
Finally, we can close the dirty chapter of coal ash in North Carolina. This will allow us to focus squarely on the pressing energy issues of the 21st century, namely the rapid development of affordable, reliable, clean energy to reduce the carbon emissions that are contributing to the climate crisis.
The AG says this settlement does not change the work that Duke Energy is committed to perform to clean up coal ash under its December 2019 settlement. Naya Harden, WRAL News, Raleigh.
Ken Smith here in the Live Center following some breaking news. The man accused of installing a camera in a women's restroom, breaking his silence this news hour. In an exclusive statement through his attorney, Russell DeMent, Lynn Honeycutt is the man we're talking about, a popular figure in our community. That statement reads in part, Mr. Honeycutt is an upstanding resident of Wake County, enjoying many years of involvement and participation in community programs and events. He is certainly mindful of the concerns arising from the charges against him, but would like to underline that there's more to this issue than has appeared in the media. Those aspects will come out in the court system in due time. Mr. Honeycutt, of course, is the man behind that popular holiday lights display at his Fieldstream Farm in Old Stage Road. He is due in court today. We'll update this story online at WRAL.com and starting at 4 o'clock today here on WRAL.
One person is dead and another is in the hospital after a shooting in Harnett County. The shooting happened on Connie Court, which is right near the Anderson Creek area. We are working to learn more about the condition of the person who was taken to the hospital. The identity of a possible shooter has not been released. In Durham, meantime, three separate shootings happened in less than 24 hours. One of them was deadly. In the latest shooting, police say a man was injured near Birmingham Avenue and Stadium Drive. Earlier, a man died in a shooting on Wake Robin Place. And on Saturday, another shooting left one person hurt on Holloway Street.
Next at noon, Rudy Giuliani is getting sued. The claims against a personal lawyer for former President Trump and the amount of money at stake.
Also, to the front lines of the pandemic for a unique look at how healthcare workers are handling the daily ups and downs.
Plus, vaccine shortages, how and where local hospitals are dealing with a less and less supply of COVID-19 vaccine.
You're watching WRAL News, now streaming free. Download and watch live on your favorite devices today.
Ken Smith here in the Live Center. We just got those new COVID-19 numbers into our newsroom showing the impact this virus is having on our state. Take you right to the numbers right now in the last 24 hours in terms of newly reported cases, 4,633 cases. In terms of new deaths, 25 people have lost their lives to the virus in the last 24 hours. But keep in mind, that's much less than what we've seen in the past 4 days. In terms of the daily percentage of positive rates coming back positive, that number is down to 10.2%. State leaders would really like to see that number at 5% or below. In terms of hospitalizations, right now, 3,287 people are in hospitals all across our state battling the coronavirus.
Ken, thanks. Dominion Voting Systems is seeking $1.3 billion in damages from Rudy Giuliani for defamation. The company claims a personal lawyer for former President Trump pushed a lie about election fraud on his podcast and TV appearances. The president of Dominion says that while Giuliani spread falsehoods about Dominion being owned by Venezuelan communists and corrupting the election, he did not make those claims in lawsuits he pushed on behalf of Trump. The vote auditing company previously sued lawyer Sidney Powell, who pushed similar claims alongside Giuliani.
House Democrats are set to deliver the article of impeachment against former President Donald Trump to the Senate today. The former president is accused of incitement of insurrection in the January 6th breach of the Capitol building by his supporters. Republican senators are divided about where they stand on convicting President Trump, who is accused of inciting that riot at the U.S. Capitol. 17 of them from the Republican side will need to join every Democrat for a conviction to take place. Lawmakers say that'll be an uphill battle.
I think the trial is stupid. I think it's counterproductive. We already have a flaming fire in this country, and it's like taking a bunch of gasoline and pouring it on top of the fire.
I believe that what is being alleged and what we saw, which is incitement to insurrection, is an impeachable offense. If not, what is?
Senator Mitt Romney, you just heard from him there, was the only Republican who voted to convict Trump during his first impeachment trial.
Thousands of families in our viewing area are in need of assistance, and there is help. Tomorrow, the North Carolina Community Action Association will host the first of many drive-through events. Sharon Goodson joins us live to preview the event. Sharon, thank you so much for talking with us. Can we hear Sharon? Sharon, I know you can hear me, but I think we might have an issue with your mic. Let's try this. Talk about what you'll be distributing at these drive-through events. Okay, I'm not hearing you, Sharon. I'm sorry. There must be an issue with the audio. We'll try to get you back here in a few minutes because we certainly want to let people know about this drive-through event taking place tomorrow at PNC Arena. I've been told that the mic issue has been fixed, so let's get back to Sharon. Sharon, if you can let people know, what are some of the things that you'll be distributing at this event?
Tomorrow, we will be providing boxes of food, some fresh produce, needed household items, baby supplies, PPE, lots of information and a whole lot more resources to help families struggling in the face of COVID. You know, it's impacted the way we do everything, the way we all live, work, and play. Community Action wants to really help people who are struggling and families, the families that we've served and those who are newly in need of assistance.
That's fantastic. Those supplies will certainly go a long way. Where did those supplies come from? Were you able to partner with a lot of different agencies?
You know what? Well, that's what Community Action is about. It has a history of collaboration, and we could not do this without partners like PNC Bank and PNC Arena, Good 360, the Food Bank. Here. We could not do it without those partners, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, AmeriHealth, Carolina Complete Health. I mean, just a wide array of partners who stepped up to say we want to help, help families who are struggling. People are home, kids are out of school, work hours have been cut, people have lost their jobs. And so we are so grateful for partners like Community Success Initiative and the people who have surrounded us so that we can provide this much needed service to our community.
Yeah, the need is real. How often will you be hosting these?
You know, this is the inaugural event. We're planning these across the state of North Carolina in various communities where community action agencies are located. You know, as you know, community action agencies have been in the field doing this work, grassroots work, for more than 50 years. And so we're going to be in rural and urban communities. We're calling on partners across the state to help us to help families.
So the one in Raleigh is tomorrow at 10 a.m. until supplies last at PNC Arena on Edwards Mill Road in Raleigh. Sharon Goodson, the executive director of the North Carolina Community Action Association, living up to its name. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Jeff?
Yeah, it's always a great day to take action, regardless of what it looks like on the outside, because it is not a Chamber of Commerce type of day. Elizabeth Gardner, the WRL Severe Weather Center, we have sent out Storm Tracker ahead of folks who may need to tackle this when they get out there.
Oh, boy, it is such a mess out there. It's one of those days, you know, stay home if you can. I mean, it's nothing that's terribly dangerous. It's just miserable out there. This is a look at Storm Tracker, a live look at where our Storm Tracker is right now on I-40 heading east back into Wake County, coming out of Durham County. So just north of Morrisville and, again, headed right down toward the Beltline of downtown Raleigh. Let's take a look at the picture, the live picture from Storm Tracker right now. And you can see what photographer Jamie Munden is seeing as he is driving along. Those windshield wipers definitely moving around out there. We have a steady rain. You can see how wet the conditions are. Fortunately, there are no backups there on I-40, and that's a good thing. Sometimes when we have just a little bit of rain, we tend to have more accidents than normal. So Jamie looks like he's moving along fine on I-40 heading back toward Raleigh, but you can see just how messy it is out there. We'll head back to the main view of the radar here, live dual Doppler 5000. Plenty of rain all across the viewing area. A couple of places where it's a little heavier, up from Person County, moving on up toward Mecklenburg County, Virginia, and into Granville County. Elsewhere, just pretty steady, and we're going to see this all the way through the evening commute. So you may want to leave a little early from work. You can tell your boss that I said so, or stay a little later, you know, get extra points for that, just because the evening commute could be rather messy. Again, kind of zoom in and see, you know, really all of our viewing area dealing with this rain right now. We take a look at what's happening. Rain's really coming down in Goldsboro here. I love it. This camera sometimes, and it's the smaller view there, sometimes when you have big raindrops on this camera, it looks like it's snowing. They're so big, and it is coming down there. RDU definitely wet. Wake Forest wet with some showers coming down, and it's raining in Durham. I mean, I'm hard-pressed to pull up a camera anywhere that isn't showing rain falling. So rainy with chilly temperatures, that's what we'll see for the rest of the day. Now, tomorrow's going to be a whole different scenario. We're going to see our temperatures as cool as 50s in some spots and as warm as 70s in other spots. And then we're going to talk more about that in a minute. And then late Wednesday, Thursday, we're still watching for that potential of a wintry mix. I'll show you the latest thoughts on that coming up in about half an hour, about 12:45. Right now, it's still 39 in South Hill, but 44 in Wilson and in Siler City. Very chilly out there, 43 degrees in Sanford, 46 in Clinton, and 47 in Fayetteville. We take a look at our very unsettled pattern. Lots of lightning and thunder with this. The warm front lifting northward, and that's going to be the big key to how things turn out tomorrow for us. This afternoon, it's likely to be chilly. Here's 5 o'clock. This is Futurecast, still looking at mid to upper 40s. Now, overnight, our temperatures are likely to start climbing into the 50s in the south, but low 40s up to the north at about 7 a.m. We move it from lunchtime into the afternoon, and look at that, 70 in Fayetteville, 56 in Roxboro. But where that front ends up, of course, you could see temperatures warmer or cooler. It's something that we'll have to track very carefully for you tomorrow, and it's a high bust sort of situation when that cold front or warm front could be really anywhere. Looking at anywhere from half an inch to an inch of rain over the next 5 to 7 days. We're going to see that next chance late Wednesday and Thursday and then Sunday as well. But we'll talk a little bit more about our chances for wintry precipitation Thursday coming up.
Coming up at 12:30, hospitals say they're getting less vaccine than they need. Sarah Kruger digs into what's causing that short supply.
And at 6, Joe Fisher discovers a similar frustration in counties across our area, and he explains why North Carolina's second largest county is getting less than 1,000 vaccines this week and the tough decisions that leaves Wake County to make. But first,
abuse, discrimination, and toxicity does not belong in an agency that has empowerment on the wall.
WRAL investigates a shakeup at the top of a local domestic violence agency and why former workers feel they were mistreated. That's tonight at 5.
Welcome back. Fighting every day on the front lines of the COVID-19 pandemic, nurses, doctors, and other medical staff helping people fight the virus.
Tanya Rogers shares the story of a Florida nurse with a unique inside look at the ups and downs the medical staff experiences.
Traveling thousands of miles from Florida, John Paul Rosario proudly sharing his vacation pictures from Egypt at the beginning of the year.
But it was my girlfriend's birthday, 30th birthday. So we went there, but by the time we got back, everything was closed. And everything was in full swing.
Little did he know, the pictures capturing the next part of his life would be emotional. JP, as his friends call him, is a COVID ICU nurse at JFK Medical Center. He works around the clock with COVID patients. He also started taking pictures of what happens behind the COVID-19 doors as patients fight for their lives. JP says he looks at this picture often. The COVID team rushing in to help a patient on a ventilator.
Everyone done on their PPE, run in, do what we could to save the patient. To me, those were the most powerful. But then all, as well, you could see the care in the nurse's face.
A story behind every picture. This one showing staff caring for patients as if caring for a loved one.
It's been rough. Seeing all these sick people coming in, we do what we can, but the biggest thing is visitors can't see their loved ones. But we do try to do Facebook messaging or FaceTime.
JP capturing more than 500 touching moments. Among them, the medical staff holding a sign that hope will overcome COVID.
Just a hope that they would make it. And even week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, they're still on a machine that sometimes they don't make it. Every time I take care of a patient, I see my family member.
Though JP says he limits his time with his family to avoid exposing them to anything, he gladly works the front lines.
Hospitals, meantime, say they are getting less vaccine than they need. And after the break, Sarah Kruger explains what is causing that short supply.
Plus, the interesting link between a federal agent and one of the men charged in connection with the deadly riot at the U.S. Capitol. But first, here are the winning lottery numbers. Caroline pick 3, 0, 6, and 5. Pick 4, 8, 6, 3, and 2. Carolina Cash 5 numbers are 2, 21, 33, 37, and 40.
This is WRAL News, your number one source for local news.
New today, some healthcare workers are criticizing the state's vaccination rollout, saying state leaders lack a clear and consistent plan. Just this morning, the North Carolina Healthcare Association sent a letter to the governor urging him to immediately address their concerns. WRAL's Durham reporter Sarah Kruger is outside Duke University Hospital to explain what's prompting the latest frustrations. Sarah.
Renee, this comes after the state changed up its allocations of vaccines. So that means hospitals like Duke University here are not receiving as many doses as they had expected. Both Duke and UNC tell me they have the capacity to vaccinate a lot more people, but the state is simply not giving them enough doses. UNC says they'll be getting 10,000 doses from the state this week for their 14 sites around the state. That is less than half of what they anticipated. Both hospitals, as well as Cape Fear, told me they will not have to cancel any appointments because they have been scheduling only after seeing how many doses they get. People I talked to say they just want the vaccines going wherever they will turn around the fastest.
I think the biggest priority should just be getting the most number of shots and the most number of arms.
I think that a hospital can only do so much. They have only a finite amount of staff. So I think the max vaccination shots would be a good idea.
And local health departments are expressing frustration about the amounts they are getting as well, which were also reduced. They wrote a letter to state officials saying some health departments will now have to cancel appointments. Now, as far as an explanation, we just heard back from state officials on why there are these reduced amounts of doses going to hospitals and health departments. They say that right now they are prioritizing sending more doses to those mass vaccination sites, but that is not sitting well with everyone. Renee.
Sarah Kruger, live outside Duke University Hospital. Sarah, thanks.
The virus has taken a toll on so many families, and today we are sharing another tragic story. This one is about a beloved employee at Apex Friendship High School in Wake County. Amy DeSormo is the district's first known employee to die of the virus. And WRL's Leslie Moreno joins us from the school with more.
Amy Desiremore worked at this high school you see here behind me and was a part-time media assistant. Today, students will return to class remotely for the first time since Ms. Desiremore's death. Her daughter sharing these pictures here with us, saying Ms. Desiremore loved working with students. Olivia Desiremore, her daughter, says her parents stayed home as much as possible and wore masks when they did go out. I do want to read you this quote here from the principal at Apex Friendship. It says in part, quote, "We love Amy so much. She was such a lively, helpful, loving soul to our teachers, staff, and students. She will be greatly missed." Now, we are told by the district that the last time Ms. Desiremore was on campus was back in March. In Apex, Leslie Moreno, WRAL News.
This week, there will be several vaccine opportunities for people. Chatham County is opening a vaccine clinic today. It is by appointment only. More than 400 people are scheduled to receive their first dose in Pittsburgh. In Halifax County, officials will start reaching out to people to set up appointments for second doses. This is to help prevent the long lines.
The Treasury Department could have its first woman leader in U.S. history. The Senate is set to vote to confirm Janet Yellen as Treasury Secretary. President Biden's pick to lead the department passed a preliminary vote on Friday with flying colors. If she's confirmed today, Yellen could immediately get to work on Biden's economic agenda, including his COVID-19 relief package and infrastructure proposals. President Biden continues to roll back policies from the Trump administration, this time affecting the U.S. military. Today, President Biden is expected to announce an executive order reversing a 2017 ban on transgender officials, individuals joining the military. Defense Secretary, retired Army General Lloyd Austin, mentioned the need to overturn the decision last week during a Senate confirmation hearing. President Trump had argued transgender troops would lead to high medical costs and disruption, but a study commissioned by the Defense Department refuted that.
A man charged with half a dozen crimes related to the Capitol riot may be the brother of a former U.S. Secret Service agent. Preston Fairlamb III led that detail for former First Lady Michelle Obama. His brother is Scott Fairlamb, faces charges tied to the riot. Scott Fairlamb's attorneys say the suspect's brother, Preston, had no prior knowledge of his client's alleged actions. Some security is being scaled back across Washington, D.C., but National Guard troops will stick around for now. According to the National Guard, roughly 7,000 members will remain in D.C. through the end of the month. 5,000 troops will stay through mid-March, helping with security, communications, medical evacuation, and logistics.
Work continues to finish 540 through southern Wake County, and the next phase means overnight closures for a major highway. WRL's Brian Schrader has a look at what you need to know to save some time this week.
Get ready for an overnight detour between Garner and Fuquay Varina this week. Utility contractors working on the 540 project have scheduled overnight closures for U.S. 401. The highway is going to be closed between 1010 Road and Ransdell Road starting at 11 o'clock every night this week. This begins tonight and it runs through Saturday. And each day, U.S. 401 is going to reopen by 6 a.m., just in time for the morning commute. You can expect a detour using 1010, Lake Wheeler, Donnybrook, and Ransdell Roads, and that detour is probably going to add about 5 minutes to your drive. This is all in preparation for the section of 540, which eventually is going to run just north of the Wake Tech campus. There's a lot of construction going on out there. DOT tells me they are still on track to have that section of 540 from Highway 55 in Holly Springs out to I-40 in Garner open to traffic sometime in 2023. I'm Brian Schrader, WRAL News.
It has been years in the making. Moving forward with the next phase of activism for a new generation. Up next, a live interview with the Raleigh native founder of a new organization aiming to be a catalyst for change.
Plus, why this is a great week to try a new restaurant and support those struggling during the pandemic. Details on the impact of the coronavirus here in North Carolina are changing every day. You can get your updates in a podcast on the go. Search Coronavirus North Carolina News Brief wherever you get your podcasts.
I stand before you today as a candidate for the Democratic nomination for the presidency of the United States of America.
49 years ago today, Congresswoman Shirley Chisholm became the first African-American woman to run for president when she announced her bid for the Democratic nomination in 1972. Even though her bid was unsuccessful, students, women, and people of color followed the Chisholm Trail. When asked about her legacy, Chisholm said she wanted to be remembered as a woman who dared to be a catalyst for change. Black women have been credited as the backbone of the movement that helped flip two Senate seats in Georgia and led to the election of President Joe Biden. Following the historic inauguration of Vice President Kamala Harris, Raleigh native Jess Moore Matthews launched a new organization to train the next generation of digital leaders. And she joins us now to talk about Backbone. Ms. Matthews, good afternoon and great to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It means so much.
So right now you work in the governor's office. Tell us how your expertise is being put to work.
So I actually run the digital solutions team within the Department of IT, and I got into this work actually coming off of two presidential campaigns last year and just feeling like I needed to continue giving back. So, been doing it ever since.
And so launching this new organization, Backbone, and you specifically chose today to launch it because of the anniversary of Shirley Chisholm's run.
That's correct. Yeah, 49 years ago, she made history becoming the first woman to run on a major party ticket, and a Black African-American as well. And so, she's a trailblazer that really inspired the entire company.
She was the first, but certainly won't be the last. Talk about the mission of your organization and what's your vision for this?
Sure. So our mission is to spearhead a revolution by training the next generation in digital activism. I know I got my start, right as social media and digital media was coming on the scene. And it was really mentorship that taught me all that I know that honestly led me to become the leader in the digital field that I am today. So it's that mentorship that really inspired me to begin Backbone and training young women of color in some of the digital tactics that we're seeing implemented across causes and organizations across the country.
So how can people get involved with your organization?
Sure. So you can find us online on all social media channels at Backbone Leaders. We are actually doing a public launch tonight on Facebook at 7 p.m. Eastern. Would love to have folks tune in to learn more about the organization. And we'll actually be opening up our fellowship program to our next Backbone Fellow. So really excited about that as well.
Very exciting. Based here in Raleigh, but do you see this going beyond state borders, even nationwide?
Oh, absolutely. We actually worked with a school board candidate in New Orleans last year. We worked with Michelle Obama's organization, which is national, nonpartisan, to get folks to the polls. And so I see this going really far.
All right. Well, keep us posted on Backbone. Jess Moore Matthews, the founder of this new organization, Backbone, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Jeff?
Oh, thank you. Sounds solid. Hey, guess what? Triangle Restaurant Week starts today. Next at noon, the founder of the event joins us live to talk about how the event will help local restaurants who are trying to make it through the tough times of this pandemic. Plus, Miley Cyrus will be warming up crowds at the Super Bowl. We'll have her reaction to the big show and her part in it coming up.
It is a wet, chilly Monday afternoon. We take another look live at Dual Doppler 5000 radar, and you can see rain almost everywhere. A couple of little thin spots there in the precipitation, but for the most part, there it is, and it's going to be with us all the way through the evening commute. After that, we get to 6 or 7 o'clock. It begins to taper off a little bit. Interestingly enough, our temperatures won't fall overnight tonight. Instead, they're going to climb. We're going to see a warm front gradually pushing northward, not making it most likely all the way to the Virginia line. So that means we're going to see a wide range in our temperatures during the day tomorrow. Mike and Kat are going to be talking a bit more about that this afternoon, and we'll be following that. It's going to be interesting to watch that tomorrow. In the meantime, just wet out there and chilly with temperatures in the 40s. Here's a look at Clinton. Those raindrops are coming down, and it's chilly. Even in Clinton, temperatures are in the upper 40s, so you really can't escape this anywhere. Next thing on tap is a precipitation event that will arrive late Wednesday and continue into early Thursday. We've started talking about this on Friday, and on Friday, the computer models had a pretty good looking setup for us in terms of a wintry precipitation event. And since then, everything has fallen apart, which is pretty typical. So this is not going to be a big snowfall event for us unless something changes in the next 48 hours. It'll be a low impact event similar to what we saw just a couple of weeks ago, where most of us ended up with rain. And then a few folks near the Virginia line saw just a brief little dusting of some snow, but nothing on the roads, no issues that you should have to worry about. This is where we are right now. This is the big system affecting us today and tomorrow, and then another low will develop and dive southward, but we won't have enough cold air in place. We'll have a high pressure system developing, but it's going to be sitting back here across parts of the Midwest instead of sitting over like New York. That's where we would need that high to move if we're going to have enough cold air to create a snow event for us, and it just doesn't look like that's going to happen. So this is a look at Wednesday at 6 p.m. Once we get into the evening, we see the rain pushing northward. Now we will see some pink potentially showing up. That means it's a mix of rain and snow or some sort of wintry precipitation. But the problem is, like we saw last time, or the good thing, depending on where you stand with wintry precipitation, is the surface temperatures are too warm, so nothing sticks. Now, there may be a period of time early Thursday for an hour or two where we could see it changing over to snow and accumulating in our northern counties on grassy surfaces. But again, it won't be enough to cause us any problems unless we see some major changes in the computer models. Here's a look at our snow potential on the European. Now, it has gone a little bit more off the deep end a little bit, but we are looking at the GFS, and you can see that it shows nothing for us. And so that's really probably where we're headed. So 47 today, mid-60s for tomorrow. We're going to watch the trends for Thursday, late Wednesday, early Thursday, and then we dry out with another chance of rain on Sunday.
Ken Smith here in the Live Center. We're following a developing story happening right now. I want to take you right out to what I'm talking about. Photographer Jamie Munden on the scene there of a water main break on Wade Avenue. You can see him pulling back to show you the scope of what we're talking about here. That intersection up at the top of your screen, that's Canterbury. But as he pulls back, it goes as far back as the J.C. Rec Center, if you're familiar with Wade Avenue. So that's where they're blocking off traffic. Of course, traffic is being diverted away, and that's the J.C. Rec Center we're talking about. And traffic is being diverted to away from that area. So if you have anybody who's heading toward Wade Avenue, let them know what's going on. We'll be back in a moment with your pet of the day.
Triangle Restaurant Week is back. The week-long celebration gives customers a chance to sample some of the area's finest cuisine. Look forward to it every year. Joining us to talk about the Winter Takeout Edition, because that's a thing. It's necessary this year. Damon Butler is the founder of Triangle Restaurant Week. Damon, thank you so much for coming on board here. 14th year of doing this event. What keeps you going, man?
Oh, man, thanks for having us, first and foremost. This year is a little different. But the format is actually the same. It's a time to get out and kind of sample some of your favorite restaurants around town. And this year, it's really particularly important to support some of our local places, actually now more than ever.
And because of coronavirus and COVID-19, I mean, things will be done just a little bit differently this year. But the message, as you say, is still so important.
Yes, it's essentially a celebration of culinary excellence. It's a time for restaurants to go in and try new ideas and throw out new dishes that they may have had before, and to put things on the menu that they traditionally wouldn't have, and actually offer some of the staples they have that are really popular hits. And kind of offer a little bit of a discount to get some folks that may be interested in trying a new restaurant for the first time, or one event children from Raleigh to Durham, or Durham to Raleigh, or Apex or Cary to come try a new restaurant and see what it's all about.
Yeah, it's a great way to dabble into some different cuisine, something you may not try normally, but no risk. You know, you get out there and do it. What about some of the restaurants that are taking part in this? Can you tell me a few of them and then kind of the format of what's included in that price?
Yeah, everything from Vic's in downtown. We got Parasite over in Durham. We have a restaurant throughout the entire triangle. We have 50 restaurants participating this year in all. That's quite a bit fewer than normal, but times are different this time. But it's the same offering. You get $20 to $35, a three-course meal, between two and three-course meal, depending on which offering the restaurant is giving this time around. We're a little more flexible this time around because of everything going on, but it's an exciting time to just get out and try a new restaurant. We traditionally see people go from Raleigh over to Durham, Durham over to Raleigh, and participating in the entire triangle with Chapel Hill too. But it's really getting out to support the local restaurants this time, and now more than ever.
And tryrestaurantweek.org is a place to get some great information there and some folks to get out there and do it. Damon Butler, thank you so much for what you do and keeping this all going here through some difficult hardships for some of these restaurants. Renee?
No worries, guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Our pet of the day comes to us from Safe Haven for Cats. Meet Hannelore. She's a beautiful 7-year-old Diluth Tortie Tabby who came to us from the Wake County Animal Center. She's very loving and affectionate, but also likes to play. She loves to be the center of attention and would love to steal your heart this Valentine's Day. Safe Haven is currently open for adoptions by appointment only. You can go to safehavenforcats.org. That's it for WRL's New News.
Cute kitty right there. Yeah, have a great day. Enjoy. We'll have an update.